Hello, my name is Brittany Lefko, and it is the third Monday of the month at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I am here to answer any questions that anybody has, as well as talk about a few things that I wrote down in advance. I know that there are questions that have come up through emails in the past that I believe have been answered, but if your questions have not been answered, please feel free to raise your hand and I can address them at this time. For anybody that this is their first webinar, there are two different ways of asking questions. One is you can click the little hand-raising button and I'll call on you. If you don't have a mic, also feel free to type in your question. It will come to me directly and I can go ahead and answer it for you. So I'm gonna get started. Basically the last webinar that I had, we didn't have a ton of participation, so I just kind of talked a bit, but the most value you guys are going to get is from asking questions and participating. So I can't read your minds. I don't know what's on them. So whether they're comments, questions, experiences, anything that you want to share, everybody else on the webinar will benefit. So please, I encourage you to participate with any questions or comments that you have. Jesse, I see that you're on the line, and I know that we had something we were going to discuss, which ended up getting postponed. So I thought this would be a good opportunity for me to answer your question. So I'm going to go ahead and call on you, see if your mic is working. Can you hear me, Jesse? Hello? No. All right, I'm going to go ahead and remute you. If you can get your mic working, definitely go ahead and raise your hand, and that way, let me look right here, I can do that. I know that I have the question written down somewhere. If I can find it, I can answer it that way. See if anybody has questions before I get started. Did anybody have any questions right now? All right, let's see here. I'm gonna see if I can find this question really quickly. Okay, great. So it says, I've run into a roadblock. I find that when I eliminate beliefs, especially at the end of a process, when I must confirm whether the belief is gone or not, I experience excitation and anxiety pertaining to the results I'll get. So it sounds like what Jesse is explaining here is that when he's trying to decide if the belief is actually gone or not, he experiences a little bit of anxiety. So this is something I've actually... That's been addressed with a number of different clients. So it's something I've seen before. So you're not alone, Jesse. But basically, different beliefs can cause those kind of reactions. So the first thing that I would say is beliefs like I can't trust myself, beliefs like I don't know what's right. So if early in life we form beliefs that kind of put an external locus of control rather than an internal locus of control, so we understand things or we depend on others, basically to explain things for us rather than trusting ourselves, it would be hard when you're saying a belief out loud, you look inside, well, I don't really trust myself, so I don't know if the belief is gone or not. So the source of that anxiety could be a lack of trust in yourself. In other words, an external locus of control. So getting rid of that beliefs and having that kind of self-confidence would enable you to feel better or to trust that you know whether the belief is gone. The second thing is sometimes beliefs, not exactly perfectionism, but beliefs like what makes me good enough is doing things perfectly or other beliefs like that would cause you to feel uncomfortable with having negative beliefs. So if you feel like you need to be perfect when you're saying a belief out loud, you wouldn't want to have a negative belief because of whatever you feel like that would mean about you. So those kind of beliefs could also cause anxiety when you're saying a belief out loud. Beliefs also like, sometimes people who are in the world of self-help have beliefs like if I have negative thoughts, something bad will happen. So kind of stuff that came out of the law of attraction. So maybe sometimes people are afraid of having negative beliefs for those reasons. That could also be another reason why you would have anxiety about having negative beliefs, or, you know, the only way to be happy is to be positive all the time. So it would feel like you're being negative. So it looks like, Jesse, you're having internet problems because you seem to have signed off and back on. So hopefully you can hear the recording. But that is a good thing to think about for anybody who's had either sessions with a certified facilitator and has found that consistently when they say the belief out loud or when they say certain kinds of beliefs out loud, they're not really sure if it's gone or not, or they experience some kind of anxiety, or just in general, if people have patterns of questioning themselves, the source of that can be, again, beliefs like, I can't trust myself to know what's right. I can't trust myself. No matter what I do, it's never going to be good enough, would be another source of not trusting yourself. So I hope that answers your question, Jesse. And if you're able to get back on the line, go ahead and raise your hand and we can discuss that more in detail. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was something that came up during the free belief webinar. And I know it's a bit repetitive, but I think it's particularly important for session clients, which is what this webinar is geared towards. So I wanted to bring it up again and talk about it. So if you did listen to the other webinar, I apologize for the bit of overlap. But I wanted to talk about a little bit the difference between emotional versus behavioral patterns and how those manifest in our lives. So there's how we behave and how we feel. And sometimes it's easy to think that we can only change our behavior. But it's important to know that emotional patterns are just like behavioral patterns, something that you can get rid of with using, you know, the LEFCO belief process. So things like anxiety and depression are patterns. And whether it's, again, something like not trusting yourself, whether it's generalized anxiety, whether it's fear of public speaking, those are all different emotions that we experience, which are the, you know, the result of underlying beliefs. So I want to take a second and call on people, see if anybody has anything to say. And then I do want to talk a little bit more about patterns and this emotional versus behavioral patterns. I have Jesse here again. I'm going to see. Jesse, can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, I'm back.
Oh, it sounds like your connection is not the best. But I'll see. Can you? You want to say something and I'll see if I can hear you? Yeah, I can't really hear you. I don't know if you want to try to sign off and on again one more time or maybe try to type in your question. I did address it a little bit. So if you here, let's see. I see your hand back up. How about now? Nope, still can't hear you. Yeah, why don't you try typing in your question? And then I can answer it from there. And then you can kind of type in whether I fully answered your question or whether that brought up further questions and I can address them that way. I have Phoenix here. Hi, Phoenix. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, but I'm not on my phone yet, so the audio quality might be bad.
Oh, no, actually, I can hear you great.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Did you have any questions about anything I've brought up so far or any comments, especially having to do with emotional behavioral patterns or just anything else that you wanted to bring up in general?
You know, I did have one question about the seeing step of LBP.
Okay.
Okay. Which is that... it's kind of convoluted, though. It's like...
That's okay.
I think for most people, it makes perfect sense the way it's phrased. One thing that's occurred to me is that just because something can't be seen doesn't mean it isn't true. For example, you can't see the law of gravity, for example. You see objects falling repeatedly, and you can see them falling in a predictable way so that we form like... scientific laws that explain what we see, but the law isn't actually what we're seeing, yet we still find it to be true. So for myself, when I'm eliminating beliefs sometimes, and that thought occurs to me, I just sort of remind myself that even though, yes, you can't see gravity, or, you know, you can't see some kind of scientific principle, those laws are actually helpful for making accurate predictions and for using them for the purpose of, you know, inventing technology and figuring out how the world works. Mm-hmm. But a belief like I'm not good enough or, you know, or the world is a dangerous place or whatever the negative belief is doesn't actually serve any useful purpose.
Right. Yeah. What you brought up. I was just going to say what you brought up is a really great point. What I would say is what you described is cause and effect. So it's not that you can see that gravity is real or isn't real. Actually, I'm echoing a little bit, so I'm going to go ahead and mute you. So you're muted right now, but raise your hand again if you want to interject at any point, or at the end I can call on you and see if I answered your question, but it was just kind of hard with the echoing. So again, what you described is cause and effect. If I drop something, it falls. You see that over and over and over again. That doesn't mean necessarily anything. All it means is if I drop something, or if I, you know, drop something, it will fall to the ground. So that's not a meaning. You'd say, oh, I'm giving it that meaning. It doesn't necessarily mean that, but you can make accurate predictions based off of what you've seen over and over and over again. The problem with beliefs, there's two things. The first one is we make generalizations. I'm going to come back to that. And the second one is we say no matter what. So gravity exists, right, on this planet. And we say, I can predict that if I drop something, it will fall. But that doesn't mean if I go into outer space, if I drop something, it will fall. So again, saying if I drop something, it will fall to the ground, that's a belief, right? That doesn't necessarily carry that it will be true in all situations. So the idea of not giving meaning is to say, I can predict that that's likely to happen, but I can't guarantee that it will happen with all things in all situations for all time, right? So again, with things like I'm not good enough, you say, I can accurately predict that if I leave my toys out, my parents will yell at me. That's a cause and effect. That doesn't necessarily have a meaning. So it's possible that they won't do it one time. It's possible that other people wouldn't yell at me. It's possible that they'll only yell at me when I'm a kid. So the distinction doesn't mean whether or not it's real, but it's about understanding the difference versus cause and effect and meaning. So again, that's even comes into account with things like intuition. I intuitively have a sense that this will happen, or I've seen it happen in the past, and so I can likely predict it will happen again. But there's a difference between making a prediction based off of what's likely and saying that something has a meaning. I'm going to unmute you. Does that make sense, Phoenix? Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, I like your answer.
Good. I'm glad. All right. Did you have any other questions?
There might be one more. I don't know. Sometimes I just wonder how many people, I don't know if I've asked this before, but how many people really have all of the negative self-esteem beliefs? Sometimes I'm out in the world and I just feel like, well, you know, those people seem so confident. There's no way they could have negative beliefs. But then when I actually talk to people sometimes and learn more about what their life is actually like, I can sort of see, I guess that a lot of people have these beliefs.
Yeah, that's another really, really great question. I'm going to mute you again. And again, feel free to raise your hand when I'm done and we can see how I did with the answer. But what you're basically describing is people with really strong survival strategy beliefs. So for anybody who has maybe only had one or two sessions or who doesn't really know a whole lot about the LEFCO belief process, what a survival strategy belief is it's a belief that is formed to cover up a negative self-esteem belief. So you're 3-4 years old, you're criticized by mom and dad, and you say, well, clearly this means I'm not good enough. And then you walk around feeling not good enough, which feels like crap, right? So nobody on the planet wants to walk around feeling not good enough. So we look for ways in which we're validated and that feeling of not good enoughness disappears. So that could be when people think well of us, we feel good enough. That could be when we say something really smart, and we're validated and we feel good enough. It could be when we achieve, when we're successful, when we're good at sports. So whatever it is that happens consistently, and whether it's our parents or close family friends, teachers, and they say, wow, great job, we're so proud of you. And that feeling of not being good enough subsides for a little while. And we say, oh, I get it. What makes me good enough is being successful, is achieving, is having people think well of me, is taking care of people. Once we develop these beliefs, it's kind of like being on a hamster wheel. We compulsively need to keep succeeding, keep achieving, keep taking care of people in order to bring that feeling of good enough back, because it's just going to disappear again, right? So again, you're on that hamster wheel where you have to keep doing it over and over and over again. So I would say that almost everybody has most of the self-esteem beliefs. After working with over 10,000 people, we found that just about everyone has them. So no matter how great our parents are, they're human, right? They have jobs, they have lives, they have children, they get stressed out, they get frustrated. And, you know, you come home after a long day at work, open the front door and trip over a toy train, you're most likely to say, "What's wrong with you? Why did you leave your toys out?" No matter how great you are, right? So even the best parents still do things that lead us to forming negative beliefs. So I would say, again, just about everyone has these beliefs. But when people really seem to have it together, that's likely because they have strong coping skills. So again, they are really successful and they believe what makes them good enough is being successful. So they're able to be validated by their positive reactions from the people around them. So I guess my main answer would be strong coping skills. Another thing I would say is that most people don't feel comfortable exposing their beliefs. And so what they've learned is how to consistently hide their beliefs. So whether or not they have strong coping strategies, they are able to put up what we would call a front or a mask, or able to focus on the positives in their life, talk about things in a particular way. So another reason why people don't come forward saying, you know, the truth is I actually believe I'm not good enough and I'm actually really insecure, right? People don't come forward saying that because they don't feel safe, they don't feel comfortable. And so they've learned to kind of put that away in a closet and have a person who is confident, or a kind of a persona that's confident, or that, you know, thinks highly of themselves. And that's what they come forward in their relationships with. Does that answer your question, Phoenix? I'm going to go ahead and unmute you.
Yes, yes, this is really great.
Good.
I just have one more brief question.
Yeah, excellent.
About, so for most of the things I've worked on, it's been quite easy to figure it out with the beliefs and the conditioning. But I've had one pattern where I think there might be some kind of deeper sense or something that is still there after beliefs are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, the Lefko sense process, is that just for self-esteem, or can you have a sense of something else, like a sense of the way life is or the way that
I'm gonna remute you again, but I'm just gonna unmute you at the end. So the sense process works for a sense of life, a sense of people, a sense of yourself. It's a really versatile process, and you can include a number of different words, images, feelings. It's kind of one of the most creative processes where you really have the freedom to explore whatever the sense is. So sometimes, you know, we'll say, what's your sense of the world? And you take a little while to kind of discuss what comes up, but it could be things like dark, heavy, hard, tiring. And so again, it's a mixture between words, shapes, colors. I mean, for some people, they're just going to have words. Some people are just going to have images, but they could say, you know, sharp, round, really anything that comes to mind, but whatever your sense of the world is. And it could be one word and it could be 25 words. So some people, again, really have a lot come up. Some people have less come up. Sometimes you can group things together and get rid of four at a time. Sometimes you can only do one at a time. But yeah, the sense process can absolutely be used for a sense of the world, a sense of people, a sense of yourself. One thing I want to suggest is the sense process is extremely valuable and can help get rid of any kind of lingering feelings that exist after getting rid of all of the beliefs. But it's also possible that there are beliefs that you haven't thought of yet that are still causing the pattern to not fully go away. So patterns can have anywhere from a few to many beliefs underlying them. And very often, a lot of the patterns are kind of, a lot of the beliefs are kind of intuitive. So again, if you are having a hard time taking risks, beliefs like, if I make a mistake or fail, I'll be rejected, is a pretty obvious belief to underlie a pattern like that. But there could also be other beliefs that are kind of more obscure. So what I would do is really spend some time, and just so everybody else on the call knows, Phoenix actually went through the LEFCO method training courses. So one of the reasons why her questions might seem a little bit more advanced is because she does have that experience and has gone through that training. So I don't expect everybody else to know and understand everything she's saying. Nonetheless, these discussions should really be useful to the way that you think about the LEFCO belief process, its applications, and how it can apply to you and your own life. But yeah, so looking for other obscure beliefs is to really imagine scenarios where you're putting yourself in the context of your pattern. So what I mean by that is imagine a worst case scenario for that pattern. If you're afraid of public speaking, imagine that you're speaking in front of 500 people and you choke completely. You can't get a word out. Everybody's laughing at you, throwing tomatoes in your face, and see what meaning comes up. So you really want to push yourself to the limit and see how far does this pattern really reach. And that can help you look at more obscure beliefs that might come up. So again, kind of push yourself to every worst case scenario to see any beliefs that could be left, because that tends to be where they're hiding. It tends to be hiding in the kind of darkest part of our mind that we're kind of afraid to open up. And if you do challenge yourself to look there, you're likely to find other beliefs. Phoenix, does that answer your question? I went ahead and unmuted you.
That was great. Yeah, I'm definitely, I typed out what you said, and some of what I've been learning through these webinars are really going to be useful, not only for myself, but also for my future clients as I build a business using LEFCO method to help people. So thank you very much.
You are very so useful. Welcome. I'm glad that it's been useful. Thank you so much for participating. Again, the kinds of questions that you bring up are so unbelievably important, because they're things I would not think to talk about by myself. And I know that, as you said, you're benefiting, so are other people. So this is a great example of why participation is so useful and so beneficial to the webinar as a whole. The other thing is these webinars go from 30 minutes to an hour, anywhere between 30 minutes and an hour. So with less participation, they tend to be closer to 30 minutes. With more participation, they tend to be closer to an hour. I've had webinars where I've had to stop at an hour and 5 minutes, and I've had webinars where I've stopped at about 35 minutes. So the more you guys participate, the more information we'll be able to jam-pack during these sessions. So again, thank you, Phoenix. Jesse typed in a question. He said, I would like to know if it is possible to eliminate a belief such as I'm unimportant, but still have a similarly worded belief like I'm not important. Yes and no. I suggest that people always look for the deepest, most uncomfortable wording for a belief. I'm not important tends to be a deeper wording than I'm unimportant. Sometimes what happens is we find similar wordings to beliefs because the belief isn't fully gone. So there's two different ways in which this can happen. The first one is that the belief isn't fully gone, and so we're looking for other wordings. Another example can be, we still have the sense, which is something that Phoenix brought up. There is a sense process. So for people who tend to be a lot more kinesthetic, a lot more emotional, really understand the world through their feelings rather than through what they see and what they hear, people like that can tend to, the belief doesn't fully go away because they're not using the kinesthetic process, or because there's still a sense there. So again, they'll keep looking for the same kinds of beliefs because it isn't fully gone. I feel like I complicated that a little bit. I'm going to take a step back. Basically, there's two situations that can happen. A belief goes away or it doesn't go away. If the belief goes away, similar wordings should go away also. If the belief doesn't fully go away, again, most likely it's either because you're kinesthetic and you need to use the kinesthetic process. It could be because there's a sense there, or it could be because maybe the source isn't right, or, you know, it didn't go away. So you need to try again with your facilitator to make sure that it's, you know, to see kind of what went wrong and go back through it that way. So I would say in general, you're not going to find situations where you have two beliefs that are so similar. Is it possible? Yes. So I said in ways yes and in ways no. There are times when you have a belief like I'm stupid and I'm not smart enough. So those beliefs are really similar, but again, they're a little bit different. So is it possible? absolutely. Is it likely? Not really. It sounds like the belief isn't fully going away, and that's why that's coming up. Yeah, Jesse, I'm going to go ahead and try to unmute you again and see if it works. Jesse, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yay. I'm so happy I can finally hear you. Good work.
Okay, yeah, cool. I had to call in by phone. My internet connection is sucking right now.
Okay. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. You answered my question about the similarly worded beliefs. Now I want to move on to that issue that we were discussing. It started by email. Basically, when I'm doing that left-field belief process, I tend to experience a lot of anxiety pertaining to the result I'm going to get. And, you know, generally that's not an issue if I'm having a belief that's not associated with anxiety. But when I initially test for a belief and I feel anxiety, I end up feeling anxiety at the end of the belief process.
Right.
Kind of, yeah, confuses me. There's a lot of static when I do it that way.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So I actually addressed this question in the beginning a little bit. Unfortunately, you had signed off, so I figured you'd listen to it during the recording. But I actually have had a couple more thoughts, so I think it's worth kind of rediscussing, kind of reopening the issue, especially now that you're here and we can discuss it together. So there are a couple different things that could be happening when you experience anxiety from saying a belief out loud. The thing that I discussed when you weren't on the call was there could be underlying beliefs like, I can't trust myself. I can't trust myself to know what's right. That doesn't really sound like your problem, but very often if people have anxiety about saying a belief out loud, it's because they don't really trust themselves to be able to judge if it's gone or not. But a couple other things that can happen is if you have beliefs like the only way to be happy is to have no issues, or you know, the only way to be happy is to get rid of all my beliefs, or if I have negative beliefs, they're going to manifest in the world, something I mentioned again when you were having internet issues before. Sometimes things like the law of attraction can make people become, I hate to use the word paranoid, but maybe overly concerned that if I have negative thoughts or negative beliefs, they're going to manifest and kind of ruin my life, right? So there's a sense of fear about admitting to negative beliefs, or about, is it going to be gone? It has to be gone, right? If it's not gone, I'm not going to be happy. My life is going to be crap. We're going to feel that anxiety, right? So another thing that could be happening is beliefs about happiness, about negative thoughts. And then I'm going to say one more thing and then I want to hear your thoughts. The other thing that I brought up, again, when your internet wasn't working, was about perfectionism. So there could be other beliefs as well, like what makes me good enough is being perfect, or, you know, if I have negative thoughts, it means there's something wrong with me. So there could also be beliefs that would cause you to judge yourself or feel maybe negatively exposed in some way that would cause that anxiety as well. Do any of those things seem to resonate or seem to be maybe what's going on for you?
You know, those all sound totally possible. I'm definitely going to try what you recommended, and I will be listening to the recording so I can get the first part of what you were saying. I can see maybe there's some perfectionistic beliefs, et cetera, going on behind the scenes, so I'll check that out. I had another question about beliefs. Beliefs coming back. I am a very kinesthetic person, and I think I've begun having basic beliefs like I'm not good enough. Those are starting to come back, and I've begun eliminating them again. I guess I'm just concerned, like, how often does this happen, and how many times am I going to have to eliminate these things?
Yeah, that's a totally valid question. It's one I'm really happy that you brought up, because it's really important for everybody who's on the call now and who's going to come back and listen. So what we found is that about 10% of people are kinesthetic. And for kinesthetic people, the LEFCO belief process, as it was originally created, tends to have beliefs come back. And this has happened for a lot of kinesthetic people. Again, it's only 10% of people are kinesthetic, and not everybody who's kinesthetic has this happen, but we've seen this happen with a handful of people where they're consistently coming back. So what we've done is we created a kinesthetic process. So it's the LEFCO belief process, but it's modified specifically for kinesthetic people. And we've had really actually staggering success on it, which is really exciting. So we've checked back after months, and we've been consistently checking back with all of the kinesthetic people who have come back to have sessions, and they have been going away permanently. So what you're experiencing is actually really normal and really typical of kinesthetic people, that the beliefs either don't go away at all, or they they go away most of the way, but there's still a sense there, or they go away and come back. Yeah, is really the only people we've seen that happen with is kinesthetic people. And again, it is about 10% of people. So it sounds like what you need is to use the updated LEFCO kinesthetic process.
Okay. Am I unmuted?
No, you're still on. Yes. Sorry. Yes, you're unmuted.
Okay. So yeah, you said use the quote updated updated kinesthetic process. Has it changed in any way? I mean, I remember it. It's, you know, imagine you're a child applying an alternate meaning.
Oh, no, it's actually a whole new process. It's not just the kinesthetic step. Yeah.
Where can I find this whole new process?
So it's not actually released yet. So again, just like Phoenix, Jesse also has gone through the LEFCO method training courses, so has learned how to use the LEFCO belief process. So for a lot of other people on the call, that's going to be something that you, so again, some of the questions are going to be, or a little bit out of your vocabulary, but basically we have not released it yet because we're still in the process of testing it with everybody to make sure that after, you know, 6 months, 8 months, all of the beliefs are gone and that it's the best wording for everybody. So the more kind of case studies we have, the better. So we're using it actively with our clients, but we haven't released it to our training classes yet because we don't have a module as well teaching people how to use it and how it's different. So it's similar to the process, but the wording is different. The steps are a little bit different. So yeah, we haven't released it yet. So I guess I don't necessarily have a satisfying answer. I would say maybe if you work with a certified facilitator and become comfortable with it through having it used on you, you could maybe learn it that way. There are probably different things we could do. I'm sure that I'm sure we could get it to you somehow. We could probably do some kind of a coaching session where I could teach you how to do it. This actually, again, is a great thing for anybody who's been through the LEFCO method training courses. If this is something that you feel like you'd be really interested in, I'm sure we could set up a way to have some kind of a session where I could coach you through using the updated kinesthetic process. This is something I have not discussed with my father, so I say it with a grain of salt, but I'm sure that if people are really interested, we could figure something out for you guys.
Okay, well, I'm definitely one of these very interested people, and I guess with your father's permission, I would certainly like to set up a coaching call to get this stuff handled and learn this new kinesthetic process.
Excellent. Yes. Yeah, so there is hope for you. We can definitely, I will find a way to make sure to get you access to the process, whether it's through me or some other way so that we can have these beliefs going away permanently. Because like I said, what you experience is something that a number of different kinesthetic people have experienced, and it's been going really fantastically well with them. So Jesse, I will get back to you with more information on how to get the kinesthetic process in your hands. And for everybody else on the call, if this is something you're running into and you want more information on the updated kinesthetic process, go ahead and shoot me an email and we can discuss it further. Did you have any other questions, Jesse?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Great participation. Everything that both Jesse and Phoenix brought up were really great things to discuss. Did anybody else on the call have questions at the moment? I can just call on a couple names that I see here and see if anybody maybe has something. I have Bill here. Oh, it looks like you're not unmuting. Interesting. Bill, can you hear me? Nope, no Bill. What about David? David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I didn't raise my hand, but I can hear you.
Okay, cool. I figured I sometimes will just call on people at random. Sometimes people don't have questions, but you know, things come up.
Well, I was thinking about, you know, when we're talking about beliefs, like there's certain beliefs and then there's certain just thoughts. I mean, I don't know, like, you know, like we're talking about, like, besides the, you know, the ones that we get that limit our self-confidence, there's like stuff that I'll never get this stuff done. There's just too much stuff to do. You know, maybe those were sense things. But, you know, so I was just thinking about that. I wasn't clear. I'm still working on my homework is to come up with some belief that I want to work out on myself, you know?
Uh-huh.
And you know, there's a lot of stuff that I get, like, I'm never going to get all this stuff done. Is that that's a belief, or is that a thought, or is that,
reality? That's actually a really fantastic question. I'm really happy that you brought that up. What you're basically describing is what we call occurrings. So you have beliefs which are formed during early childhood, right? So you watch mom and dad's behavior, you listen to what they say, and you conclude generalizations about people, about yourself, about the way things are. You say, you know, life is hard, I'll never get what I want, people can't be trusted. And those beliefs, again, of course, affect how we see the world, how we behave, how we feel, what we think. What you're describing is our occurring. So that's the meaning that we give to events in the moment. Now, our occurrings are dramatically influenced by our beliefs, but they are independent of our beliefs. So for example, you're driving down the freeway, someone cuts you off, and you give it the meaning they are a jerk. They don't respect people, they're rude, and you're most likely going to feel angry, right? All that happened, as everybody on the call knows, our basic premise is events have no meaning. So the fact that somebody cut you off on the freeway doesn't actually mean anything. It could mean they're a jerk. It could mean that their wife is giving birth at the hospital and they're speeding because they're trying to get there. It could mean that, you know, they weren't paying attention. It could mean, you know, that their car's about to run out of gas and they're trying to get to the gas station as quickly as possible. So when you see that events have no inherent meaning, meaningless events can't cause feelings. So it's not until you give an event a meaning that a feeling is produced. And again, of course, the variety of meanings that you give are going to cause different feelings. An example that my dad loves to use, which is unbelievably true, is, and this was actually in a video he made, so it might be familiar to some people, but my mom likes to leave water glasses all over the house. And I'm not sure why. I was just visiting my parents in California. And when I was at their house, I was laughing because it hasn't changed. I mean, there's literally 3 water glasses in her office, 1 in the bathroom, 3 in the bedroom, 4 in the kitchen. I don't know how she does it. And my dad was giving it the meaning she expects me to pick them up. And that's really rude. And he got so frustrated every time he saw the water glasses. And at some point, once he, you know, developed the occurring process, he was able to see that she didn't necessarily expect him to pick them up, that she's incredibly clean and caring and loving and kind, takes wonderful care of him. And if he doesn't move the glasses, eventually they'll make their way down to the kitchen. He started thinking of it as hilarious that now, you know, we walk into the bathroom and wonder how a water glass ended up next to the sink and we'll start laughing and it's a family joke. So again, the fact that my mom leaves with water glasses around doesn't cause a feeling. It's she doesn't respect me. She expects me to clean up after her. That's going to cause anger, right? That my mom is incredibly, again, clean and loving and caring and kind and takes care of him in a million ways. The fact that she leaves water glasses around is pretty humorous. So when you have a stack full of papers, if you give it the meaning, I'm never going to get all of this done, and you feel overwhelmed, right? That's the result of that meaning. If you give it the meaning, a different meaning, maybe I'm going to get done as much as I can, and that's going to be good enough, and you really feel that way. Or if you say, you know, if you're, I would need a little bit more context for this particular occurring, but if you're able to have a different meaning, you're going to feel really differently. So I know that was kind of a lot of information, but does that for the most part answer your question?
Yeah, no, I like what you said about, because I see some of my judgments, you know, about people, and then that if something just happens, it happens. Like people, like just, I was going away to work and the guy sort of pulled out, and I wouldn't have pulled out, you know, in front of me. So I got a little upset. And I was like, you know, I didn't give him the finger or anything, and I thought about it. And I thought, well, I don't know. I guess, you know, he just wanted to get out there. But, you know, I did see my emotions raising. So it's not the fact that he pulled out, but then my judgments are that he probably wasn't safe, that you know, I wouldn't have done that. He's unconscious. He's stupid. All those judgments I have about a lot of people are my beliefs that I have to get rid of, I guess, is sort of my judgments about the occurring is the belief process.
Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like, yeah, what you're describing is occurrings. And that's what the Left Go Freedom course does, is it helps people to, or it basically teaches you how to dissolve those occurrings in the moment. So again, that's different than the Left Go belief process, which is how you get rid of beliefs from childhood. The occurring process is how you learn how to dissolve basically those negative occurrings that you have in the moment. And there's a huge variety of ways in which the occurring process can be used, even with things as dramatic as losing your job. You know, if you give it the meaning, I'm screwed, I'm never going to get another job, this is a catastrophe, that's how it's going to feel. It's going to feel like a catastrophe, right? But if you're able to say maybe something like, this job really is not an ideal job for me, And what I've always wanted is to do X, Y, and Z. And now that I'm rid of this job, it's finally an opportunity for me to do what I'm really passionate about. It's going to feel like an opportunity and not like a disaster. And that's actually a real life example from somebody in one of the occurring courses, is that they, after they lost their job, and they wrote us a letter thanking us, saying that in the past, they would have given it the meaning, I'm a failure, this is a catastrophe, you know, I'm screwed. And using the occurring process, they were actually able to see it didn't mean they weren't going to get another job, that they did have enough in the bank to, you know, support the family for a while. And it didn't necessarily have the consequences that they would have assumed it did. And you know, he was able to go on to do what it was he was really passionate about, and said it felt like a huge opportunity rather than a catastrophe. So that's how you use the occurring process in these kind of moment-to-moment events. Now, one thing I do want to reiterate is that our occurrings are very much influenced by our beliefs. So if you have beliefs like relationships don't work, women can't be trusted, people don't understand me, you're likely to have the same kind of occurrings popping up all the time. When you're around women, they'll say something, you'll say, well, you know, they can't be trusted. Of course they would say that. Or, well, you know, relationships don't work anyway. So of course she's going to behave that way. So if you get rid of those beliefs, your occurrings are likely to change, but you don't need to get rid of your beliefs in order to get rid of your occurrings. Does that make sense, David?
Yeah, no, this is real helpful, because I think it's just the difference. You know, it's I like to list it. You know, Morty's got that list of the beliefs, and I'm thinking, okay, are those, once you get rid of those beliefs, I thought I was done. And then I keep finding I got to keep going here.
So, that totally makes sense. What you're basically describing is the difference between getting rid of beliefs and getting rid of patterns. So it's easy to feel like because you get rid of all the self-esteem beliefs, you no longer have patterns of behavior or patterns of emotion. But how the Lefko belief process actually changes your behavior is not simply through getting rid of beliefs. It's through getting rid of clusters of beliefs that underlie particular patterns of behavior or patterns of emotion. So to give you kind of more specific examples, procrastination is a pattern. Now, very likely there will be negative self-esteem beliefs that underlie that pattern, but there will also be different beliefs. So maybe beliefs like, again, no matter what I do, it will never be good enough. If I make a mistake or fail, I'll be rejected. What makes me good enough is doing things perfectly. Those aren't necessarily on the list of self-esteem beliefs, but those would add to patterns like procrastination. Same thing again with relationships. Relationships don't work is not one of the core self-esteem beliefs. But if you believe relationships don't work, your relationships are likely to not work, right? So, so to think that, again, I guess to put it differently, getting rid of beliefs is empowering, it's helpful, it's wonderful, but getting rid of beliefs will not necessarily change your behavior. Getting rid of patterns will change your behavior. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's good. That's important, because I think, you know, the behavioral changes, you know, there's certain things that, you know, I think those are, I'm a psychotherapist, so working on behavioral changes, and I just see sometimes my simple things that I'm trying to change. I guess a belief I've just noticed. I was going to say it's difficult, and I noticed myself that that's a belief. So, that sometimes they don't change as quickly, I guess, as I think that they could.
Yeah, I mean, and even the way that we see change is a pattern, right? So I will frequently work with clients on patterns where they either expect change to be difficult and take a long time, or where they have a sense of hopelessness or frustration regarding their ability to change. And very often beliefs like change is difficult and takes a long time, or progress is difficult and takes a long time. Beliefs like that exist. Even beliefs like I'll never be different, or I'm hopeless, or things are the way they are, life is hard. Those kind of beliefs can also cause us to have a negative view of progress and of change. So those absolutely can exist too. So I would think of that as a pattern within itself. But it's really important, and I just, again, want to really emphasize this for everyone on the call. There's a big difference between getting rid of beliefs and getting rid of patterns. Getting rid of beliefs will be empowering. You will notice small changes in how you feel. Sometimes you'll notice big changes in how you feel. But in order for a pattern of behavior to actually change, to be eliminated completely, you have to get rid of all of the relevant underlying beliefs in that pattern. So does that again make sense?
Yes, yes. And I'm looking at, like, even applying it to my golf game, you know, because I've been taking lessons, and I thought I was doing, you know, I was hitting the ball pretty good. And then when I went, I hadn't played for a while, so I went on the course, and it didn't translate as well as I wanted it to, you know. So I'm thinking, that's an interesting point. Can we change? You know, that's sort of more of an objective. Well, I don't know, more objective, but, you know, you can measure it, how many swings it takes you to get at the hole or something like that. It's sort of a fun. It seems like, okay, I laugh because my friend once told me, you know, I never played golf much. He would say, Dave, you know, you never get any better. And I would say, well, Gary, that's because I never play. Now I've been playing. I'm thinking, I know I'm getting better, but it's still, you know, like maybe not as better as I think I should as quickly, you know, kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's an interesting play on how to use this, you know, for that kind of a behavioral change. Like golf is one of those things that is sort of
It's funny that you bring up golf. We actually did a study using golf, working with professional golfers a couple years ago, and found that by eliminating all of the core self-esteem beliefs as well as a number of other beliefs specific to golf, that all of their golf games dramatically improved, because we were interested to see if eliminating beliefs not just would change your behavior, but if it could affect things like sports. And different beliefs, again, would lead to different occurring. So very frequently somebody would have one bad swing and that would kind of ruin their game. And it's because of certain beliefs and certain occurrings, right, like we just talked about, that change their mental state and change their golf game. So it's, again, funny that you brought up golf, because that's actually a pattern that we've worked on pretty consistently with all of those golfers. Your beliefs can even affect things like sports, like your golf game, you know, other areas in life that we might not expect to find negative beliefs lingering.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's, you know, it's fun. It's a lot of fun doing it, playing, you know, just playing with them and becoming more conscious and aware of those things. So it is fun to play, because I like how to apply it to all these things. And then I keep capturing myself saying, oh, okay, that's a belief there. And, like, you know, and I hit the ball and it didn't go where I wanted to. So what does that mean? You know, that just means the ball didn't go where I wanted to. You know, I hit it too far back. Too far.
It was really,
you know, that's much easier than getting mad about it, or, you know, thinking that that's going to do something good about it.
Yeah, and especially, like you just said, not giving it the meaning that it means anything about the next golf ball, right? So just because one didn't go where I wanted it to, it doesn't mean I'm going to mess up the next one, right? And that's where most people get lost, is in assuming that the future is going to be like the past. So just because something happened once, that doesn't mean it's going to continue to happen that way. And I think that's where most people really get caught up with their occurrings, is one thing happens and they lose their confidence expecting, you know, something negative to happen because it happened once. And that is really one of the biggest pitfalls of our occurring, is when we have these negative thoughts, we, you know, so to speak, go down the black hole, rather than saying, oh, like you just said, it doesn't mean anything other than that it didn't go where I wanted it to go. It doesn't mean anything about the future. It doesn't mean anything about anything at all. Right.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. It's almost like, well, it's like being enlightened. I think, you know, when we talk about it, I get tingly sometimes, but I don't know if you feel like you accomplished a kind of enlightenment state yourself, or do you think your father has? Just, I mean, this is sort of a side question.
No, I mean, it's a great question. About my father, absolutely. About me, absolutely not. my dad has mastered this, the occurring process. You know, he teaches the Lefko Freedom Course, and I've watched him progress over the years, and I think he's developed a level of mastery that's pretty inspiring. I don't know if anyone knows, he's been writing blogs about it, so it's very public, but my dad has cancer right now and is undergoing chemo, and people say, you know, you must be so scared, you must be so upset, and my dad has, you know, been so incredible through this whole process. And he says, you know, people keep calling me brave and courageous, and I appreciate that. He said, but you have to be scared in order to be brave and courageous. He said, the fact that I have cancer has no meaning. Doesn't mean I'm going to die. It doesn't mean I'm going to live. It doesn't mean that my life is ruined. It doesn't mean I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do. He said, you know, the process is not like a broken leg, because when you have a broken leg, you don't have to go through chemo. So obviously it's a lot more involved. He said, but to me, it doesn't feel different than having a broken leg. He said, you have a broken leg. What do? You go to the doctor, you know, put a cast on, and at some point you heal. He said, if I'm part of the 1% or part, you know, if my chances are 1% or 99%, it doesn't really change anything. He said, my prognosis doesn't mean anything. All it means is statistically there have been that many people. He said, there's no reason why I'm more likely to be in the 1% than in the 99%. He said, if I do what they tell me to do, that's it. So people have been very inspired by him, as well as, you know, my family has been inspired by him, because he is literally not giving the fact that he has cancer any meaning, and it's just not producing feelings. I've never seen him in better spirits. I had dinner with my family the other night, and you know, we were sitting around the table laughing and enjoying ourselves. He's in Chicago right now, undergoing treatment at a hospital. He just was accepted into this really interesting program. So, I would say that my father really has reached enlightenment. I don't remember the last time I saw him aggravated or frustrated or upset. I mean, he really just doesn't give things meaning. And he's, you know, written blog posts about the fact that he's an incredibly passionate, loving person. It's not that he's a robot because of it. If anything, he's just clear and able to really connect to what he feels his purpose in life is, and, you know, his love for his family and his friends. But yeah, so my dad, absolutely. Me, absolutely not. I have not practiced as much as he has, and I have not mastered the occurring process. But yeah, he really has.
That's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for sharing that, Brittany. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for your participation. So I'm really happy that David brought that up. The occurring process is a pretty phenomenal tool. I always was a lot more attached to the belief process because I didn't like the idea of having to consistently use the occurring process. But again, what I have found in people like my dad is it becomes really almost automatic, that once you get really used to dissolving those occurrings, you know, he says, I don't try to dissolve occurrings anymore. It just happens naturally. So the occurring process is pretty incredible. And as well as, you know, the belief process for everybody here, you know, who's experienced it, as you eliminate these negative beliefs, you just kind of see the world differently. When we do the creator space at the end of a session, we get you to see, you had the belief, I'm not good enough, I'm not important, and I don't matter. And you say, was your life consistent with those beliefs? Well, absolutely. You thought, felt, and behaved as if those were the truth. They colored your entire world. They created your reality, your experience. And then all of a sudden, one day, you eliminate those beliefs, realize they're no longer true, and your entire world looks different. You think, behave, and feel differently than you did. So if you put these beliefs in your head, if you created these beliefs and your beliefs create your life, that profound sense that who you are is actually the creator of your life becomes so real, that if you have all of these beliefs, like if I make a mistake or fail, I'll be rejected. What makes me good enough is doing things perfectly. No matter what I do, it's never going to be good enough. What are the chances of you wanting to take risks and go for it? Right? They're going to be so minimal. You're going to be fighting an uphill battle. And that's not to say that people can't overcome situations without eliminating their beliefs, because absolutely we see acts of strength and heroism and courage all over the world all the time. But they're the result of people fighting against beliefs. And when you're able to eliminate those beliefs, it really kind of recolors your entire world to see, if I make a mistake or fail, it doesn't mean anything, that, you know, things can go as I want them to. The world is not inherently hard. My life doesn't necessarily need to be hard, right? So it's really, really powerful. So I just got a question typed in. Please distinguish between the belief process and the occurring process. So the way that I kind of described it before, and I'll try to elaborate on it a little bit, and Nitsan, if I don't answer your question, go ahead and type it in or raise your hand for me. Basically, the belief process looks at meanings that we gave during early childhood. So they're not meanings that we gave now, but meanings that we gave to events in the past. So again, our parents fought all the time. We looked at that. We were little kids and we said, well, I guess this means relationships don't work. And for the rest of our life, we automatically have that feeling, that expectation, that sense, that belief that relationships don't work. So it's not that something happens in the moment and you attribute meaning. It's the result, the residual effect of a conclusion that happened early in your life. What the occurring process is the occurring is meanings, arbitrary meanings that we give to events in the moment. So again, someone cuts you off and you say it means they're a jerk. A friend doesn't call you on your birthday and you say it means they don't care about me. Somebody breaks up with you and you say it means that I'm a bad partner, or it means that nobody ever is going to want to be with me. So the occurring is things that we decide in the moment based off of events. Does that distinction make sense, Nitsan? Good. You have explained the difference, how the two are caught. Oh, so you're talking about the process. I'm sorry. So what Nitsan was wondering is how we get rid of occurrings versus how we get rid of beliefs. So we get rid of beliefs through the Lefkoe belief process, which is what you do when you work with a certified facilitator and you go back into childhood, you look for alternative interpretations. There's a number of different steps that you go through, and that's kind of the typical Lefkoe belief process. That's how you get rid of beliefs. The occurring process is a tool that you use moment to moment. And the Lefkoe Freedom course teaches you how to use the occurring tool. So one of them is a process that you do with a facilitator where you go back to early childhood. The other one is a tool that you use in a moment-to-moment basis that you learn through the Lefkoe Freedom process. Does that answer your question? Not yet. Okay. Okay, so let me try to explain it this way. One of them is, I mean, it basically comes back to the way in which they're different, which is what I thought the question was originally. So the way that you eliminate a belief is by going back into childhood and looking for interpretations generally. Now, of course, it's a little bit more involved, but basically when you're eliminating a belief, you're going back to the source of the belief, which is early childhood. When you dissolve an occurring, you're going to the source of the occurring, which is something that happens in the moment. And you're again looking for alternative interpretations and doing a few other steps. So, I mean, going through the steps, it's a tool that you learn how to use. So I'm not going to go through all of the steps of the Lefkoe belief process or the Lefkoe occurring process. But in both cases, yes, exactly. In both cases, you go back to the source. It just happens to be that with beliefs, the source is early childhood for the most part. And the source of occurrings is whatever happens, the events in the moment. Great. Understood. Good. I'm glad I was able to explain that for you. So we have about 3 minutes left. If anybody has any last questions, I can go ahead and address those. I'm not going to start a whole new topic, from my little to-do list. But if anybody has any last minute questions, I'd be happy to answer them before we end. Going once, going twice. Any last questions? No. Okay, great. That was a really phenomenal webinar. Thanks to everybody that participated. Those were all great questions. I really appreciated the discussions that we had. Again, I want to reiterate for everybody who was on the call and for everybody who's going to be listening, these webinars are really made by people's questions, people's participation. There's no way to describe how valuable they are. So thank you so much to everybody that participated. And there were times when I called on people that didn't even think that they had a question, and we were able to get a really great discussion going. So even if you don't think you have a question, you just have something on your mind, feel free to raise your hand and we can see, you know, maybe if there's a question hiding there or just a topic that we could discuss where we can kind of unpeel something of value at all. So for everybody that was here, thank you so much for being here. For everybody that's listening, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. Again, this is the third Monday of the month. The webinar is at 6 o'clock p.m. This is to anybody that's had sessions at all, any clients from the past or from the current moment. My name's Brittany, and I look forward to seeing you guys next month. Take care.